celebrated the birth of Jesus at this time. For only a bit longer, Jews have celebrated Hanukkah on 8 nights, beginning on the 25th of Kislev. For many thousands of years before that, people in the northern hemisphere have gathered in darkness to welcome the return of the sun. Each of these occasions has its own unique stories, songs, and sentiments. Yet, here they are crashing into one another as we come together tonight. So on behalf of those gathered, I welcome you, whether you celebrate Christmas or Hanukkah or Solstice or Bodhi Day, the celebration of the enlightenment of the Buddha, whether your special dinner tomorrow is turkey or ham or latkes or tamales, or whether you're just going to clean out whatever's in the refrigerator, whether you gather with family, with friends, with animal companions, or with no one at all, whether you will celebrate tomorrow or work or rest, whoever you are, wherever you come from, whatever your shaping stories, whoever you love, I welcome you here tonight. And let's take a moment to greet one another, say Merry Christmas or Happy Hanukkah or Blessed Yule or Happy Holidays or whatever you say to other people this time of the year. Okay, I'll invite Rose Tonona up to help us with lighting the chalice. And I'll read a chalice lighting from Mariel Cleary. We are children of the light. Without the light of the sun, nothing would come to life on this globe, and we would never have been. Our lives follow the pattern of night and day. We have made lights for ourselves to brighten the dark, and we stand in beauty at the wonder of the lights and stars and moons. We have now reached the turn of the year when the days, grown very short, have started to grow longer again. Like our forebears through many ages, we light candles to celebrate the turning of the year. And our opening hymn is number 235, which is Deck the Hall. Michael Oldfather made sure to tell me it's Deck the Hall, not Halls, with Bells of Holly, because apparently we only have one to deck. So I invite you to rise as willing and able and spirit in mind and body, and let's sing.
Deck the halls with the bells of holly, la 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 la. 'Tis the season to be jolly, la 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 la. Don we now our gay apparel, la 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 la. All the ancient rules I know, la 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 la.
So one of the particular events we celebrate tonight is Hanukkah. And rarely does it coincide so completely with Christmas. It is its own holiday, not a mini Christmas, and it's not one of the most prominent or important holidays of Judaism, but when it falls right now, we can't ignore it. And so we're going to begin by learning a little bit more about it.
Every winter, Jewish families gather to light a branched candelabra called a menorah. For 8 nights, they celebrate their families and celebrate their faith. The holiday is called Hanukkah, also known as the Festival of Lights. When we think of Hanukkah, we think of the menorah. Its 8 flames burn in testament to a glorious victory that took place over 2,000 years ago. Around 200 BC, the Jewish people in Jerusalem were living under Egyptian rule, though they remained largely free to work and worship in accordance with their customs. Then, in 175 BC, Antiochus IV Epiphanes ascended to the Syrian throne, invaded Egypt, and desecrated Jerusalem. In an attempt to assimilate the Judean people, Antiochus forced them to worship Greek gods and outlawed Judaism, banning all Jewish rituals upon threat of death. The ultimate insult came in 168 BC, when Antiochus seized the Jewish holy temple in Jerusalem and dedicated it to the worship of Greek god Zeus. For a Jewish high priest named Mattathias, it was time to take a stand. Together with his 5 sons, Mattathias sparked a revolt, pitting the desperate Jewish faithful against vastly superior Syrian armies. The battle raged for 3 years. Against improbable odds, the Jewish uprising, led by Mattathias's son, Judah Maccabee, emerged victorious. Judah Maccabee and his small army of soldiers recaptured Jerusalem in 165 BC and liberated the Holy Temple. According to the Talmud, the Jewish high priests eagerly prepared to light the ceremonial menorah, the eternal flame which would rededicate the desecrated temple to the glory of God. But they found that the Syrians had defiled all but a small flask of oil. It was enough to light the menorah, but for a single night. Hours turned to days, and miraculously, the menorah burned on until 8 nights had passed and more oil could be produced. It was time for Hanukkah, Hebrew for dedication. Against all odds, the menorah had not been extinguished, and so the flames of the branched menorah are a potent symbol of the Jews' indomitable faith. The menorah holds 9 candles, with the center candle used to light 1 candle on each of the 8 nights of Hanukkah. During Hanukkah, children play a game with a dreidel, a 4-sided spinning top with a Hebrew character on each of its faces. It is thought that the dreidel began during the reign of King Antiochus, when Jews secretly gathered to study the Torah. If soldiers arrived, the Jews could pretend to be gambling. Jewish adults also give small sums of money, or gelt, to children during the holiday. And though not traditionally a holiday for gifts, Hanukkah's proximity to Christmas on the calendar has made it customary to exchange gifts on one or all of the 8 nights. For Jews around the world, Hanukkah is a time to reflect on the strength and spiritual resolve of the Jewish people. It is a celebration of triumph over religious persecution and of a miracle that kept a menorah lit for 8 nights.
Jake's going to help me with lighting the menorah. Is there anybody else who knows the Hebrew blessing? I'm going to say it if you want to join me. You want to come and join me? You want to join me from back there? So, he's going to light the shamus, which is the helping candle. he's going to light one candle for the first night of Hanukkah. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam asher kidshanu b'mitzvato v'tzivanu l'delit ner shel Hanukkah. Holy One of blessing, your presence fills creation. You make us holy with commandments and bid us kindle the Hanukkah light.
Thank you.
And now we're going to sing number 221, Light One Candle. Offer a reading.
Imagine for a moment that you have walked into a magic store, and there they are selling special flashlights equipped with magic lights of different kinds. For example, you can buy the light of science, and when you point that flashlight at your hand, you see not a hand, but cells and blood vessels and tendons and ligaments. Or you can buy the light of art, and you point that flashlight at your hand, and you see your hand as if it were a painting by Leonardo da Vinci. You see form and color and texture. And you're having a lot of fun trying out the different flashlights with the different lights. And then you see one labeled the light of Hanukkah. What will you see in that light? It is interesting that according to Jewish law, when we light the Hanukkah menorah, we are prohibited from using its light, from reading by it, or doing some other task by it. Instead, we are commanded to simply look at the light. All year long, we are looking at what we see in the light. But on Hanukkah, we are to focus on seeing the light itself. We are to fill our eyes with the light of Hanukkah so that when Hanukkah is over, we will continue to see our lives in this special light. What is special about the light of Hanukkah? The Zohar, the chief work of Kabbalah, teaches us everything is new when we see in the light beyond the sun. The light of Hanukkah is the light beyond the sun. It's the light beyond nature. It's the light of miracles. And what does the world look like in the light of miracles? The world looks like a miracle. In the light of nature, nothing is new, but in the light of miracles, everything is new and novel. When I point the light of science at my hand, I see cells, I see veins. When I point the light of art at my hand, I see form, I see shape, and I see color. But when I point the light of Hanukkah, I see a miracle. We fill our eyes with the light of Hanukkah for 8 days, so that when the holiday is over, we see everything is a miracle. We see that even nature is actually a miracle. Albert Einstein once said, "There are two ways of looking at the world. Either you see nothing as a miracle, or you see everything as a miracle." When you look at the world in the light of Hanukkah, you realize that the world is completely unnecessary, that you're unnecessary, that everything is unnecessary. And yet the world is here, and you are here. Celebrating the unnecessary is really the celebration of love, because the ultimate expression of love and kindness is not in doing what I have to do, but in doing what I don't have to do. If I dent your car and then offer to pay for it, it is not an act of love. The law governs what I have to do. But if one day I decide to wash your car or to buy you a new one, that is an act of love. Without the light of Hanukkah, we would be totally blind to the true Hanukkah victory, the triumph of God's love. It is only in the light of Hanukkah that we are able to see the infinite possibilities of love. In the light of science and in the light of art, we see aspects, and only some aspects, of what is there. But in the light of Hanukkah, in the light of miracles, we see all that is and all that can be. In the light of Hanukkah, we see that everything is a miracle, and only love is real. Anything is possible, so never lose hope.
Thank you. James Frazier's The Golden Bough, originally published in 1922, deals with the adoption of the Nativity on December 25th by the ancient church. The Persian god of Zoroastrianism, Mithra, was serious competition to the Jewish and Christian gods and had to be dealt with. And so I adapt these words from what Frazier had to say. In the Julian calendar, the 25th of December was considered the winter solstice, and it was regarded as the nativity of the sun, S-U-N, because the days began to lengthen and the power of the sun to increase from the turning point of the year. Mithra was regularly identified by his worshippers with the sun, and his nativity also fell on the 25th of December, his birth. The Gospels say nothing about the date of Christ's birth, and accordingly, the early church did not celebrate it. In time, however, the Christians of Egypt came to regard the 6th of January as the date of the Nativity, and the custom of commemorating the birth of the Savior on that day gradually spread until by the 4th century it was universally established in the East. But at the end of the 3rd or the beginning of the 4th century, the Western Church, which had never recognized the 6th of January as the date of the Nativity, adopted the 25th of December. And in time, its decision was also accepted by the Eastern Church. One Christian writer said, "It is a custom of the heathen to celebrate celebrate on the same 25th of December, the birthday of the sun, at which they kindled lights in token of festivities. In these solemnities and festivities, the Christians also took part. Accordingly, when the doctors of the church perceived that the Christians had a leaning to this festival, they took counsel and resolved that the true nativity should be solemnized on that day, and the festival of the Epiphany on the 6th of January. Thus, it appears that the Christian church chose to celebrate the birthday of its founder on the 25th of December, in order to transfer the devotion of the heathen from the sun to the one who was called the Son of Righteousness." And so we celebrate the Nativity, the birth of Jesus, now. Jessica?
Jessica? In those days, a decree went out from Emperor Augustus that all the world should be registered. This was the first registration and was taken while Quirinius, the governor of Syria, all went out to their own towns to be registered. Joseph also went from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea to the city of David called Bethlehem, because he was descended from the house and family of David. He went to be registered with Mary, to whom he was engaged and who was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for her to deliver her child, and she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in bands of cloth and laid him in a manger, because there was no place for them in the inn. In that region there were shepherds living in the fields, keeping watch over their flock by night. Then an angel of the Lord stood before them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid, for see, I am bringing you good news of great joy for all the people. To you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, who is the Messiah, the Lord. This will be a sign for you. You will find a child wrapped in bands of cloth and lying in a manger." And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of heavenly hosts praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest heaven, and on earth peace, goodwill among people." When the angels had left them and gone into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, "Let us go now to Bethlehem and see this thing that has taken place, which the Lord has made known to us." So they went with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the child lying in the manger. When they saw this, they made known what had been told them about this child, and all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds told them. But Mary treasured all these words and pondered them in her heart. The shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all they had heard and seen, as it had been told to them.
A time for wandering, a time for sitting beside their children's cribs, feel glory in the sight of new life beginning. They ask, where and how will this new life end? Or will it ever end?
Each night a child is born, is a holy night, a time for singing, a time for wondering, a time for worshiping. Each night a child is born, is a holy night.
Each night a child is born is a holy night, a time for singing, a time for wondering, a time for worshiping.
Each night a child is born is a
I'm going to invite the children to come up here to help me with something. So pick one out. Just put your hand in and pick one. Anyone? Put your hand in and pick one. Because I've got a little crush, a little manger scene here, but I'm missing some things. So you're going to help me. Okay. Let's see. Is it empty yet? No, it's not empty yet. Okay. Let's see. Who doesn't have one yet? You don't have one yet. Let's see. What else is in there? Is it empty? Okay, let's see. So I'm going to think about this from the perspective of this is our little like kind of barn-like thing. And what do you think was here before Mary and Joseph or anybody else? What was here? Animals. Okay, so there were animals here, not camels. The camels come later, but the other animals. Who has the other animals? Can you put the animals in the stable? Not the camel. The camel's not there yet. The camel's going to come with the wise men. Okay. Do we have any other animals? Okay. All right. And I think there's also going to be, there's going to be a little manger, which is a little like trough that the animals eat out of. They eat hay and stuff. That's it. So we put the little trough there. Okay. So we've got a little manger, which is what that little thing is, and we've got some animals. So then Mary and Joseph are going to come. Do we have Mary and Joseph? Let's see. No, that one's not. Let's see if we can. Yeah, that's Mary. You want to put Mary? No, that's a king. You know, they are a little hard to tell apart, but I happen to know which ones are which. Oops, Mary fell down. Can somebody pick Mary up? Okay. Is there a Joseph somewhere? Let's see. Yeah, I think that might be Joseph. I don't know. Okay. So we've got Mary and Joseph, and we've got the animals. So what's that? They both have hoods. Okay, so now we need a baby Jesus. You have the baby Jesus. Can you put the baby Jesus in the manger? Okay. Now, we heard the story of Luke that has the shepherds come, but this is really the story of Matthew in this stable because it's the wise men that come, okay? So who's got wise men who are bearing gifts? Can you bring them here? And they're going to come on camels, so the camels can come now. You think that's kind of, maybe that is. Maybe that's a wise man. Okay, so put the wise men and the camels. We should have three wise men and three camels. Wow, you didn't, yeah.
They don't stand really on top.
Oops. Look what I found. I found another animal. Okay. Let's see. Okay, there's one. Oh, it goes right on the camel. I didn't know that. Okay, so have we got all three wise men? Huh. Oh, well. Ah, there he is. Okay. So a lot of times people put up these little creches with the various people who came to look at the baby Jesus so that they can just be kind of reminded of the parts of the story. So thank you all for helping me put this together, and you can look at it as we go on through the service. Okay? You do? Okay. All right, so you can go back to your seats. Thank you. And if I remember right, we're going to now sing Jesus Our Brother, Kind and Good, because we've got the animals and all that stuff. So 243, Jesus Our Brother, stand as you're able and willing.
My favorite Christmas story concerns the rather snobbish ox who shared the stable with the family from Nazareth. With considerable amazement, he witnessed the visits of shepherds and the strangers from the east. heard all the talk about stars and angelic choruses, and finally watched Mary and Joseph flee with their son. For days, the animals could talk of nothing but their human guests, while the ox silently chewed his cud over in a dark corner. Finally, he reproved his companions with this reflection. "I don't understand all the excitement. I don't know. I really don't know why you are so interested in that vagabond family. If they had been anybody worth knowing, they would never have stayed in this broken-down shack. As for the baby, it was very like any other baby that I ever saw. They were very ordinary people, I would say. Very ordinary people indeed." Oxen are rather long-lived creatures, and this one proved to be the Methuselah of his kind. He was still around 30-odd years later to witness the dismal end of the stable-born child. He then remarked to his companions, "I knew it all the time. That chap was of no account. He was the very ordinary son of some ordinary people." Then the donkey, who had carried Jesus many interesting miles, woke up to say, "Perhaps you are right. This man may have had a humble birth and a humiliating death. An ordinary birth and an ordinary death for such people. But he certainly lived an extraordinary life."
Thank you, Maeve. Our clashing seasonal celebrations yield all kinds of experiences and feelings, and Dick has one to share with us.
It was exactly 9 years ago. A stunning and memorable event occurred right outside the fellowship here, right outside the front door. And at the time, I felt inspired to pen a few modest verses to memorialize the unique event. Every word of the story I'm about to tell is true, or at least has a very strong element of truthiness to it. And there were many witnesses, including Mark Mosier, Mark Mayfield, Larry Weaver — he can vouch for me later if you doubt my word — Steve Mull, Marilyn Caldwell, Sue Turner, Michael Oldfather, and others. By way of a little background before I read the poem, I just want to remind you about what happened. There had just been about a 100-year blizzard, which had buried the entire fellowship, the walkway, the parking lot, the grounds, the whole area, in a deep, impenetrable blanket of snow. This was not a job for a few volunteers with hand shovels, and there was fear that we would have to cancel all the Sunday services until the spring thaw. But then Steve Mull showed up, towing a large flatbed trailer, groaning under the weight of a self-propelled, approximately 19th century vintage, approximately 2-ton Mega Drive snowblower powered by a gasoline engine. It had one speed, slightly faster than any human attempting to steer it could possibly run, and there was only faint hope the thing could be guided before crashing through whatever obstacle lay in its path. Steve made the mistake of driving it down the front sidewalk here from west to east with a right-blowing exit so that the snow blew out the side facing the building and facing the front windows of the building, rather than blowing the snow down the sledding hill toward the lower parking lot. The fact that the force of the blown snow did not break all the windows in the Jupiter room is evidence of the existence of miracles, but it did take several weeks to scrape off the thick crust of snow that had fused to the glass of the windows. Well, about halfway through the task, the drive chain broke. Steve finally gave up and tried to haul the contraption back home from the top parking lot where his truck was parked. However, halfway down the driveway to Zinedale Highway, he lost control on the ice, and Steve, his car, the trailer, the snowblower, and whatever occupants of his car, probably Marilyn, slid across the highway and into the ditch in the yard across the street here. And if a car had happened to be traveling down the highway at that inopportune moment, Steve would be no more. But he lucked out. Steve then tried repeatedly to spin out of the ditch across the street. And after numerous near successes and slippings back into the ditch, he did succeed, but not before he had converted the front yard of this house across the street and of the unsuspecting resident into a rut-scarred mud hole resembling the site of a recent demolition derby. One other relevant fact before I read the poem, that the RE kids had just performed some music which was intended to serve as a siren call to guide Santa to the fellowship in case his GPS had malfunctioned. And now the poem describing the event. Two nights after Christmas, 'twas two nights after Christmas with snow falling thick, with all eyes to the sky but no sign of St. Nick. The UUs convened to confront their concern. They wondered if Santa would ever return. Could he no longer summon his usual mirth? Had he finally abandoned embattled old earth? Then the UU kids' music began to be heard, and we realized all their fears were absurd. We knew that as soon as those tones reached his ear, he'd hightail it back to our little blue sphere. The landscape at Oak Grove was mantled in snow like a blanket of yeasty white well-risen dough. So to make sure UUers would venture to church, not be stranded at home or left in the lurch, UU volunteers formed a snow-shoveling crew. Larry and Michael, Marilyn and Sue, and Mark was there too, both Mayfield and Mosier, risking frostbite while braving sub-zero exposure. And others as well, far too numerous to mention. Then Steve Mull arrived with a wondrous invention. Designed and contrived by snow-thwarting Norwegians working in far distant North Polar regions, funded by secret philanthropist sources, powered by mythical nuclear forces. The marvelous snowdrift outblowing contraption, crushing the drifts by reductive compaction, hurling the drifts with incredible might, blasting them into suborbital flight. The rockets of snow shot beyond UU Hill, cleared Zinedale Highway, and soared farther still, whizzing down past the peaks of the Zinedale Ridge and landing right under the Kaw River Bridge. Then, abruptly, Steve's gizmo went wildly berserk, and with belts popping loose, the darn thing ceased to work. Steve loaded it back on his four-wheel drive sleigh and, cueing his reindeer, prepared to away. But as he drove off, he encountered a glitch. Losing grip on the snow, he slid into a ditch. Steve's marvelous snow-crunching blasting device now lay ignominiously buried in ice. There's a lesson to learn in this Christmassy tale and from what came to pass in that strange snowy gale. We must all learn to savor the new fallen snows, or enshrine them in paintings or poems or prose, and shun all machines built for snowdrift ablation, or we might feel the sting of snow's retaliation.
I invite you to join in singing verse number 1 and 2 of number 57, All Beautiful the March of Days. Has a reading for us.
This is the story of Hongduk, the one-man choir. A Sunday afternoon it was, some days before Christmas, with rain, with wind, with cold, winter's gloom. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy. Fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. This holy hour was jarred by a pounding at the door. Now what? Deep sigh. Opening it, resigned to accept whatever bad news lies in wait, I am nonplussed. A rather small person in a cheap Santa Claus mask, carrying a large brown paper bag, out thrust, trick-or-treat! What? Trick-or-treat! Tongue-tied, I stare. He shakes the bag at me, and dumbly I fish out my wallet and find a dollar to drop in the bag. The mask lifts, and it is an Asian kid with a $10 grin taking up most of his face. Want to hear some caroling? He asks in sing-song English. I know him. He belongs to a family settled into the neighborhood by Quakers last year, boat people. Vietnamese, I believe, refugees. He stopped by at Halloween with his sisters and brothers, and I filled their bags. Hongduk is his name. He's maybe 8. Want to hear some caroling? Sure. Where's the choir? I'm it, he says. And he launched forth with an up-tempo chorus of Jingle Bells at full lung power. This was followed by an equally enthusiastic rendering of what I swear sounded like Hark the Hairy Angels Sing. And finally, a soft-voiced, reverential singing of Silent Night. Head back, eyes closed, from the bottom of his heart, he poured out the last strains of Sleep in Heavenly Peace into the gathering night. Wet-eyed, dumbstruck by his performance, I pulled a $5 bill out of my wallet and dropped that into the paper bag. In return, he produced half of a candy cane from his pocket and passed it solemnly to me. Flashing the $10 grin, he turned and ran from the porch, shouted, God bless you, and trick or treat, and was gone. Who was that masked kid? Hongduk, the one-man choir, delivering Christmas door to door. I confess that I'm usually a little confused about Christmas. It never has made a lot of sense to me. It's unreal. Singing about riding in a one-horse open sleigh is ludicrous. I've never seen one, much less ridden in one. Never roasted chestnuts by an open fire. Wouldn't know how to if I had one. And I hear they're no big deal anyway. Wandering wise men raise my suspicions. And shepherds who spend their lives hanging about with sheep are a little strange. Never seen an angel, either, and my experience with virgins is really limited. The appearance of a newborn king doesn't interest me. I'd just as soon settle for some other president. When was this written? Babies and reindeer stink. I've been around them both, and I know. The little town of Bethlehem is a pit, according to those who've been there. Singing about things I've never seen or done or wanted, dreaming of a white Christmas I've never known, Christmas isn't very real. And yet I'm too old to believe in it and too young to give up on it, too cynical to get into it and too needy to stay out of it. Trick or treat. After I shut the door, came near hysteria, laughing and tears and that funny feeling you get when you know that once again Christmas has come to you. Right down the chimney of my midwinter hovel comes Saint Hong Duk. He is confused about the details, like me, but is very clear about the spirit of the season. It's an excuse to let go and celebrate, to throw yourself into the holiday with all you have, wherever you have it. I'm it, he says. Where's Christmas? I ask myself. I'm it, comes the echo. I'm it. Head back, eyes closed, voice raised in whatever song I can muster the courage to sing. God, it is said, once sent a child upon a starry night that the world might know hope and joy. I'm not sure that I quite believe in all the baggage heaped upon that story during 2,000 years, but I am sure that I believe in Hong Duk, the one-man Christmas choir, shouting, trick or treat, door to door. I don't know who or what sent him, but I know I'm tricked through the whimsical mischief of fate into joining the choir that sings of joy and hope. Through a child, I've been treated to Christmas.
Frosted window panes, candles gleaming inside, painted candy canes on the tree. Santa's on his way, he's filled his sleigh with things, things for you and for me. It's that time of year when the world falls in love. Every song you hear seems to say, Merry Christmas, may your New Year's dreams come true. And this song of mine, in three-quarters time, wish you and yours the same thing too. It's that time of year when the world falls in love. Every song you hear seems to say, Merry Christmas, may your New Year's dreams come true. And this song of mine, in three-quarter time, you and yours the same thing.
If only for the season. Let us banish cynicism and welcome wonder. If only for the season, let us downplay our differences and discover the bonds of common origin and continuing cause. If only for the season, let us set aside worry and smile and laugh and sing. If only for the season, let us deny apathy and indifference and truly live by loving. If only for the season, let us subvert covetousness and jealousy and be both good gift-getters and givers. If only for the season, the brief season of light, life, love, let us be wise enough to be a little foolish about candlelight and children and matters of the heart, if only for the season.
Let me have the kids join me up here again. I think somebody recognized this already, didn't you? The Grinch, yeah. We're not going to read the whole thing, but I'm going to ask you to help me identify some things here. So that's the Grinch. You do. And what does the Grinch think about Christmas? He hates it. He hates Christmas. He hates Christmas. The whole Christmas season. Now, please don't ask why. No one quite knows the reason. It could be his head wasn't screwed on just right. It could be, perhaps, that his shoes were too tight. But I think that the most likely reason of all may have been that his heart was what?
Two sizes too small.
And then who are these folks?
Maybe he doesn't like the songs.
That could be it. These are the people of Whoville. Now, what do they think about Christmas?
They love it.
They love Christmas. And they do all these different things, and then they do something that he likes least of all. It's the song, right? Every who down in Whoville, the tall and the small, would stand close together with Christmas bells ringing, and they'd stand hand in hand, and the who's would start singing. They'd sing, and they'd sing, and they'd sing, 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 sing. And the more the Grinch thought of this who Christmas sing, the more the Grinch thought, I must stop this whole thing. Why, for 53 years I've put up with it, now I must stop this Christmas from coming.
He wants to take everything from every single house.
He does. He wants to take everything from every single house. And that's what he does. He disguises himself in Santa Claus and loads some bags and some empty sacks on a ramshackle sleigh, and he hitched up old Max. Poor Max. He does. And he takes all the stuff, like you said, from all the houses. He stuffed all the food up the chimney, and now he'll stuff up the tree. And then who does he see?
A little girl.
Little girl, little Cindy Lou Who, who sees him stealing all this, but it doesn't stop him. Oh my goodness, look at all that stuff he got. It was a quarter past dawn, all the who's still abed, all the who's still a snooze, when he packed up his sled, packed it up with their presents, the ribbons, the wrappings, the tags and the tinsels, the trimmings, the trappings. And he hears the song. So the who's aren't sad about losing all their Christmas. Isn't that weird? They're not sad about it. The sound wasn't sad. The sound sounded merry. It couldn't be, but it was Mary. Very. He stared down at Whoville, and the Grinch popped his eyes. Then he shook. What he saw was a shocking surprise. There they are, every Who down in Whoville, the tall and the small, was singing. Without any presents at all. He hadn't stopped Christmas from coming. It came somehow or other. It came just the same. And the Grinch, with his Grinch feet ice cold in the snow, stood puzzling and puzzling. How could it be so? It came without ribbons. It came without tags. It came without packages, boxes, or bags. And he puzzled 3 hours till his puzzler was sore. Then the Grinch thought of something he hadn't before. Maybe Christmas, he thought, doesn't come from a store. Maybe Christmas, perhaps, means a little bit more. And what happened then?
The sleigh fell.
Yeah, well, in Whoville, they say that the Grinch's small heart grew
three sizes
that day. It had been 2 sizes too small, and it grew 3 sizes that day. And the minute his heart didn't feel quite so tight, he whizzed with his load through the bright morning light, and he brought back the toys and the food for the feast. And he, how does it end? He himself, the Grinch, carved the roast beast. Yes. Okay, thank you for listening to that little piece of the story. You can go back to your seats. So, some of us have this dilemma at Christmas. Like Robert Fulghum, we're confused. What are we celebrating? What do we do with the theology and the meaning of Christmas? And do we mush Christmas together with Hanukkah and solstice and Kwanzaa and celebrate hope and joy and the return of light? Do we just reject the religious meanings and celebrate the season? Or do we secularize it and stick to deck the hall and ornamenting the Christmas tree? The live Christmas tree that we'll replant when the season's over with plain balls or maybe commemorative Hallmark ornaments from Star Trek or Harry Potter. Anything just to avoid the stars and angels and mangers. But you wouldn't be here tonight if somehow you didn't want to celebrate the season in some way, and that's true with me too. You know, when I visit my mother at Christmas, and we go to the Christmas Eve service in the big Baptist church, and every seat's filled, and the music just lifts me and carries me away. And at the end of the service, when everybody holds the candles aloft singing Silent Night, I cry every time. I cannot believe the beauty and peace of that moment, but that doesn't make me a Christian. It certainly doesn't make me a Southern Baptist. So the question for me ends up being just, what am I celebrating? And I don't have a pat answer. I know that some people are celebrating Jesus' birth every year. I know some are celebrating the miracle and hope of birth. Some are celebrating the return of light. This year at this time, some are celebrating Hanukkah. And my own answer changes from year to year. And sometimes I'm with the Grinch, but sometimes I'm with the Grinch at the end of the story, that Christmas came without ribbons, came without tags, came without packages, boxes, or bags. And as far as I can tell from reading this book, it came without mangers or shepherds or sages or stars shining in the night. But there is a clue in the video, because there the Who's down in Whoville sing these words: Christmas Day is in our grasp, as long as we have hands to clasp. The celebration of Christmas is a celebration of love. Love for one another, love for newborn babies, love for Jesus, maybe. Love we show by giving gifts and cards, by sharing meals, by singing together. The love may come from a traditional family, from a family of choice, or from a group of friends. It may even come from people in a fellowship. Christmas has plenty to offer, even if Jesus is not a full-blown divine Savior. And that's comforting to me. If we can listen to what we have each found and see what we discover when in the presence of those who are sharing from their hearts, maybe, whether we agree or not, something from the heart will catch, as it does for me each Christmas Eve when we light candles, as it did for Fuljum when Hongduk sang, and as it did when the Grinch's heart grew 3 sizes. So may it be for each of us this year. And we'll join together in singing number 251, Silent Night. And I trust that you all are going to know at least the first verse, because I think it may be dark when we start. But this weird thing's going to happen, where there's going to be light passed around during Silent Night. And the best way is for the person who is getting the light to bend the candle so that the wax doesn't fall so much. So if you're getting the light, bend it to the candle of somebody near you. And we'll be singing Silent Night, number 251. And let's rise in spirit and body. In heavenly peace. May the season bless you with what you need in this time. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Blessed Solstice. Amen. And please join us for cookies in the Alsop room down the hall.